Recordings have started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms, RPM, in All GTLD's PDP Working Group call, taking place on the 20th of July, 2016. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call, as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. So if you were only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no name, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to you, Kathy. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Terry. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining our call today. I'm Kathy Kleiman, one of the co-chairs, and I see that J. Scott Evans and Phil Corwin, our other co-chairs, are on the call today. I wanted to make a note that because it's summertime, we're all going to be going on vacation at different times, and to remind you that these calls are recorded and also transcribed, and that the recordings and transcriptions are sent out after the call, and they're also available on our wiki. So if you go on vacation and want to catch up, that's a very good way to do it. Today we have a lot of material to cover. Many of you joined us in Helsinki, either in person or remotely, for the meetings that we had, both the outreach session and the face-to-face. And last week we continued our detailed discussion of the trademark PDDRP, Post-Delegation Dispute Resolution Procedure. And what we've gotten in these discussions that we've been having are a number of issues and concerns about the PDDRP and a discussion about those issues and concerns, as well as suggestions that have been sent to us via the list and in meetings about ways to change, ways we might change or modify the PDDRP. As of Wednesday, we had 5 responses. Some very detailed and much appreciated, and of course more responses are welcome. But staff has pulled together a tremendous document, which is now posted, which compiles the issues and concerns that have been raised by working group members, as well as suggestions that have been raised about possible changes to the trademark PDDRP. And so we're going to go through this today, maybe add to it, amplify it, and see, we're looking for two things, both additional issues and concerns, if we have them, additional clarity on kind of both sides of the issues and concerns. Is it really an issue or concern? Is it not? There's interesting discussion going on some of these. And then what changes might be offered to correct what some see as an issue or concern, and are there ways to find out more information if we need more clarity on the issue? And rather than my reading through everything, I'm actually going to urge the people who made some of the suggestions that you'll see in the document to join me in discussing the issue as we come forward. So if you are involved in it, as I'm giving the overview, please feel free to raise your hand and argue for or against something that you submitted. I think that'll make it much more interesting than my merely reading through the document. And you know, and then the overall question at the end will be, does this document encapsulate our issues and concerns, or is there a lot more work to do? So let's get started. The first issue here is, does the trademark PDDRP provide sufficient mechanisms for review and possible resolution of problems prior to filing of the complaint? So the current requirement is that at least 30 days prior to the complainant has to notify the registry operator in writing of its specific concerns and the specific conduct it believes is resulting in infringement of the complainant's trademarks, and that it's willing to meet to resolve the issue. So there's hope that in 30 days a resolution can come. The registry operator may or may not be aware of the concerns. There's hope that this can be resolved. We're also seeing some indication that ICANN compliance may be providing an avenue for complaints and early resolution. So the overall question is this an issue or concern that the working group should address? And if so, what steps would you like to take? And I want to open this up to questions, and as people are raising their hands, hopefully, I'll just review some of the suggestions that have been made on the list. One is that mediation should be part of the process. We've heard this suggestion several times. The other is that mediation should be available at the request of the registry operator. And some are saying that mediation is a great idea and will reduce the number of complaints that proceed forward into a formal proceeding. Another part of the discussion, people have responded that the complainant and the registry will already have spent a lot of time and money, and it may be better to let the complaint go through or to structure the proposal to permit mediation on a skeletal complaint. So, good. Petter, thank you for raising your hand. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Petter Ingford here. Just wanted to make a note what I wrote on mediation. I, together with many of the participants on this working group, have very good experience of mediation as a way to solving a dispute, and at the end, what came out from that may be a solution of a different kind of a problem that rather than that the one that was initiated by the dispute, so to speak. So it's very very practical way to solve some initial questions if there are parties that are on the same level, so to speak, and it's also the mediator's role to make all parties heard on a practical way rather than clean legal issues. I've seen some comments on my proposal there, and I appreciate that we have a discussion that can start on this. I just wanted to also note that mediation is not always a face-to-face meeting. There are some online mediation procedures, and I think that if we should introduce mediation as one of the initial part of the dispute resolution procedure here, it has to be online to keep the cost down and to make it also efficient for both parties. So thanks, that was my initial comments.
Thank you, Petter. Let me ask, does anyone want to comment? First, does anyone oppose the addition of mediation? Would you say that is there general agreement that having additional mechanisms for possible resolution of problems prior to filing a complaint is probably the right way to go? Does anybody object to that? Okay. Does anybody object to the concept of online mediation? Susan, and then Greg. Thank you.
Hi. I don't necessarily object to the mediation or online, but I am a little bit concerned that that could be played, and mediation, depending on how it's done, maybe online could be more economical, but it can be very expensive. So it would seem to me that whoever is requesting mediation may have to pay the lion's share. We might want to put something in there that puts the burden on the entity requesting the mediation, because if we have created a case as a company and feel strong about it and is going to file it, we've tried to bring the other party to the table to talk and they won't, then all of a sudden we're required to do a mediation that is expensive and may require travel, that kind of thing, then it could be played. And so I would want to make sure that there's some checks and balances in there for it.
Thank you, Susan. Important points. Greg, go ahead.
Hi, Greg Chapman as well. And I'm not objecting to mediation either, but I do think it's important, to recognize, what mediation is basically a structured negotiation. So both parties have to be, if both parties aren't willing to negotiate, the mediation is hollow, at least willing to hear each other out in the mediation. Looking at some of the conversation in the chat, needs to be clear that whatever we're doing here is going to be, confidential without prejudice, non-binding, unless the parties actually do come to an agreement. There's no, the mediator doesn't, or shouldn't, come to a decision. The mediator is a facilitator. If the parties come to a binding decision and an agreement, then that itself should be binding, but there should not be any, expectation that the result will, that there will be a result that is binding, unless it's, agreed to by both parties. I agree entirely that there should not, the mediation aspect should be as lean as possible. A skeletal complaint. There are always opportunities later on in the process to come back to the table to discuss a resolution. This is kind of intended to be an early intervention at the beginning of the process, almost like the CEP in the IRP. So I think it, should be fairly lightweight in terms of the burdens on both parties. So again, online mediation, and if it's and no, if one party or the other is not willing to mediate in good faith, the time period should be terminated.
So, Greg, actually, you just responded. But let me double check to the question I had, which is, you would require consent by both parties for the mediation, not a mandatory mediation, but a voluntary.
Well, since mediation is a structured negotiation, if one party is not willing to negotiate, that's a problem. I mean, we could make it mandatory, but can you mandate that they actually, work, in good faith? I mean, maybe you can, but it's kind of, not being a mediator myself, but having participated in some mediations, I could see that, if you don't have, if you have an intransigent party, throwing them in a room, that they're not willing to be in and they're not going to participate in, is, it'd be troublesome. One would hope that they would be willing to participate. It should be in everybody's best interest. But, some party might say, this is, I have nothing to talk about, or I'm not willing to talk.
Good point. I don't know how you mandate cooperation. That's a very good point.
We have litigation, which is, dispute resolution procedures, which is to drag the unwilling into a common place.
Agreed. I'm going to call on Petter next, and then, but also raise a question, which is, do we know if the PDDRP providers can provide mediation services, or would this be outside of the current dispute providers? If there are any dispute providers online, if you could answer that question, that might be really useful right now. Petter, please go ahead.
Petter, just a quick note to reply to Greg. I fully agree with you, and I mean, that's what's mediation. It's impossible to have a mediation session if not both parties or all parties involved agrees to sit together, so to speak, even if it's online, and discuss the topic. What can be done is that the dispute resolution provider reach out to the parties and ask or suggest then for a mediation as the initial part, and then it's of course it's up to the parties to make a decision within some limit time to see if there is possible for to solve it that way.
But, Petter, let me ask you a question. Wouldn't that require the filing of a full complaint at that point? That's what brings a PDDRP provider into the process to date.
You may be right there. we'll need to have some added look at that question to see if there is some kind of informal initial way to do it, but at least that it is automatically in some way in the system that mediation is provided or suggested, and then it's up to the parties to decide within some time limit to start that, and if not, to proceed with the formal dispute resolution procedure.
Okay. So let me summarize, not seeing any providers raising their hand. Thank you, Petter, for that. Let me summarize some of the suggestions I'm hearing, and I know I believe it's Mary who's probably taking the wonderful notes and capturing them on the right side under agenda notes. But I'm hearing that we're interested in online mediation to keep costs down, perhaps a process that allows the filing of a skeletal complaint to invoke the mediation procedures. Obviously, it should be mutual to go into mediation, and that we want to explore whether this is an offering that all of the providers can provide. So, but there seems to be general agreement that there should be another informal initial way, to use Petter's words, of resolving, in addition to the complainant contacting the registry. I'm not hearing anyone asking for that to be revoked, the 30 days, the 30-day notice, which is the current requirement, then adding the option of mediation, of an online mediation. Terrific. Can I ask, there is a note about additional avenues for information, and somebody has written to the working group recommending that we reach out to NAMINET, which has experienced panelists and mediators, to obtain some firsthand accounts and guidance. I was wondering if whoever made that suggestion could provide us with additional information, and maybe it's Bradley Silver. Thanks, Bradley. Go ahead.
Sorry, it's not actually me. I had a comment about what you were saying just before you began that train, if I might.
Please go ahead.
And that was, wanting to make sure that the mediation procedure contains sufficient incentives to make it an avenue for early resolution as opposed to just an additional hurdle before the PDDRP can be instituted. And some of the things that I was thinking about are, you know, wondering what incentives would exist or could be considered in order to make that happen. And we spoke about making it non-binding, but that having one of the parties turn it down, you know, I see in the notes was a suggestion that that may have an implication on PDDRP costs later on, which I think is definitely worth considering. But I also thought about how easily it could become a hurdle and just an additional layer of complexity before filing a PDDRP, which I found a bit puzzling in light of the fact that the PDDRP is, it's not like we're seeing many instances of it being invoked. So we certainly shouldn't be thinking about speed bumps to ensure that spurious complaints are dismissed early, since that doesn't seem to be a real world problem at the moment. But it also, you know, I also thought about how, considering that the next step would be the consideration of the, you know, the threshold consideration, that, you know, mediation may be something worth considering once that requirement has been satisfied, because at that point the respondent, the registry, will be in a position to know that the complaint is a strong one, or at least satisfies certain basic criteria, and there would be an incentive to resolve it, as opposed to, you know, proceeding immediately to the PDDRP stage. So I'm just suggesting that for consideration as part of this idea that we need to make sure that there are incentives to have mediation be a way to resolve the process before we get into a full blown PDDRP as opposed to a mere hurdle.
Thanks, Bradley. Don't get off the phone yet. Let me ask you a question. There are two different proposals on the table then. One is that mediation could be invoked through mutual agreement on a skeletal complaint. But you're now recommending that it go through a threshold review, which would, I believe, require a full complaint. Let me check with you on that if that's what you're recommending.
I'm recommending that we consider both. I don't have a well-formed idea on how to ensure that which one of those will meet the criteria of making sure that it's something that speeds towards resolution. Both may have merits, but I just wanted to put the other on the table then for us to consider.
Okay, thank you very much. Does anybody want to respond or weigh in on kind of a full complaint with the initial administrative threshold review, which is indeed part of the rules of the PDDRP, versus kind of a lighter mechanism to enter into mediation? If not, Mary, if we could make a note of that as an issue now raised, we have kind of two avenues to enter into the mediation process that are proposed. Greg, go ahead.
Just as another twist to the issue, as mentioned in chat, that it may make sense to require a first response from the respondent as well as a complaint from the complainant. In looking very quickly at the mandatory mediation that George posted in the chat, I see that it's triggered by a time period that starts with the filing of the defense. So it seems to me that if you're going to have a mediation, and if it's anything more than just kind of a truly skeletal, just almost a sentence, that perhaps the playing field should be leveled in that, each party should have a chance to say something once, especially if you're going to, have a full complaint, you're going to kind of have a situation where one party knows what the other is thinking, but not vice versa. And that probably is not a good starting point for a structured negotiation.
That's a good point. Thank you, Greg. And I'm just, for the person who's coming in on audio, there's an active discussion going on in the chat room with Paul Keating noting that a full complaint is required because the claim must be fully understood, gamesmanship must be avoided, and most importantly, the provider must be there to provide the structure to the mediation. And Paul McGrady saying mediation is a mechanism to reach settlement or at least agreement on what issues will be left out of arbitration or litigation. Agreeing to the decision of a neutral is not mediation, it's arbitration. So that was a note to Mary. Paul, are you able to come on to the call to speak? Because I wanted to ask you about your suggestion. I wanted to urge us, because we have a lot of other material. Clearly, this is an issue of interest and concern to the working group and different approaches. It was suggested that we reach out to Nominet. And, Paul, if that was your suggestion, I was wondering if you could flesh out a little more what kind of information Nominet might provide. I'm not familiar with their mediators, and then if other people have suggestions. So, Paul, can you come online? And meanwhile, I'll call on Paul McGrady. Sorry. The request was for Paul Keating to come online, if he could, to talk about Nominet, but Paul McGrady has his hand up. Paul, can you go ahead? Sorry, Paul, I'm not hearing you. Is anybody else hearing Paul? Okay, I'll ask. He's having trouble with his audio. Okay, I hope you can dial back in and join us. So, Paul Keating is writing that Nominet runs a DRS process that takes place once the complaint and response have been filed. It is therefore a typical mediation process handled by Nominet. The matter is either resolved or proceeds to decision by a panel. So I like the idea of reaching out to Nominet to find out more, maybe even inviting them onto the call. Does anyone object to that? And does anyone have any other mediation processes that they'd like us to look to as well? Okay. Does anyone else want to say anything about mediation before we move on to the requirements for filing a complaint? Great. Thanks for that discussion. We're now on whoever's controlling the slides, if we can move to the top of page 2. Are the requirements for filing a trademark PDDRP complaint too narrow? Currently, the rules provide for an individual complainant to file with its particular legal rights. Should this be, you know, is this an issue or concern for the working group? And one of the suggestions that's been made for a change is that a class action option be added, at least regarding second-level complaints. And that there is, so one person suggesting a class action in terms of second-level complaints. Someone else has suggested some form of joining an action or consolidating cases. And there seem to be some pros and cons that you can read on this page as well. Does anyone want to talk about changing? Petter, do you want to come on? I know you were involved in this. Do we want to change the options for filing a complaint?
Thanks, Petter here. Well, basically, I put this on one of the topics because having gone through what we have discussed in previous meetings, I thought it was an interesting issue to further consider, at least, and also as someone suggested to reach out to the Registered Stakeholders Group for GTLDs, as they will definitely be involved also in this. And the reason why it may be, at least at the second level complaints, may be interesting and more efficient to have some kind of class action is that it's at this level, it's you need to show that the registry operator has a pattern or practice of actively and systematically encouraging registrants to register second-level domains. This pattern or practice may be difficult to show if you're only one complainant with one specific trademark. As I see it, these kind of disputes in these parts, they may more practically involve a number of trademark holders that can see this kind of practice.
Petter, let me ask you a question. There was a third bullet point in this area under discussion. Is that someone on the list responded that they believe the PDDRP may already contemplate consolidated complaints, at least implicitly. That was the response. Do you think that's not the case? And I'd welcome anyone else's input on that.
Well, from what I conclude, I don't think it is.
That's easy. Does anyone disagree with that? Does anyone read the rules of the PDDRP to allow consolidation of by multiple complainants together? Petter, thanks. Let me ask Beth. Beth?
No, I have a question. This is Beth Allegretti. How, if we did a class action type of system here, which I think is a good idea, how do brand owners know that others are having issues, unless we sort of talk amongst ourselves? How would we know if there are 10 or 20 other trademark holders who are having the same kind of issue with the registry? Is that something we need to build in? Is there some sort of repository where complaints are held?
That's a good question. I wish the providers were online so we could ask them. I don't believe a complaint becomes public when it's filed, but I can be corrected on that. Beth, maybe Paul Keating has a response, but it's a great question. Paul, go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me, Kathy?
Absolutely. I can hear you, and thanks for coming on, Paul.
All right. Sorry about that. Paul Keating, for the record. The complaint is not public. Matter of fact, the process is not public until the decision is reached. That's been my experience and my information. Although, Beth, I would sympathize with trademark holders. I don't see any difference between the not knowing involved in this process that we're discussing and the not knowing in real life when you have multiple claims filed in God knows what court in any jurisdiction in the world involving some trademark dispute in which your client might have an interest. So I don't think that we necessarily need to go through the process of creating a publicly available database and then having to deal with all of the personal information and informational exchange restrictions that apply with that. I think that's well beyond what is necessary to protect the rights of IP holders in the real world.
Thank you, Paul, for that response.
I'm just for the record, I'm completely against class actions. Okay, if one trademark holder wishes to go after multiple, make multiple claims against what it asserts to be the same person or same registry, that's fine. But intellectual property infringement is very, very factually intensive, and it does not lend itself well to the typical connotation of a class action.
Okay. Mary, I hope we're capturing all of this. Thank you, Paul. That makes sense. Could you also put that – could you just make sure that's captured in full? Because I think that's an important insight. Is there anything – also, do you want to comment on Nominet for a second, reaching out to Nominet, circling back to mediation for a second?
Sure. I handled a lot of Nominet actions largely on behalf of respondents, I think one complainant perhaps, but it's a very efficient process. The downside is that most of them in the weak cases, the complainant walks away and the respondent is faced with the legal bill. Right, with no means of the mediation enforcing any potential claim against the complainant. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't see a way around that because, as many people more knowledgeable than I on this call have said, mediation is voluntary and you cannot. The minute you start imposing penalties, you're going to encourage people not to mediate, which is the contradictory to what we want to do here, I think. So the results, when the process in Nominet is very simple. When the DRS, the equivalent of a UDRP, is filed and the response is timely filed, then it automatically goes to mediation and Nominet, literally they have a mediator, picks up the phone and they call you and bug you by email until you respond and they try and engage resolution of the matter. And it's typical shuttle diplomacy. They talk directly with the complainant and directly with the respondent. The respondent and complainant do not speak unless they want to build a bridge independently. Mm-hmm. The result is either the dismissal, withdrawal of the complaint, usually the sale of the domain name to the complainant, or it proceeds to panel decision.
And you think that
it's very efficient. It's very efficient. They have one person handling the matter in charge of it. I've only had one person do all the mediations I've ever been involved in. They're very short. They take 10 days, 15 days at the most. And I would highly recommend that we build in a mediation process and we include policy statements that encourages mediation. And I would go so far as to state that if one party does not wish to participate in mediation, then the other party should have the right to raise that with the decision panel, and the panel should be able to consider that in rendering a decision as to costs. I think that's the stick that gets used to bring everybody to the table. We have in the U.S., for those of you who are not U.S. lawyers, we regularly
Paul, let me just pause for a second.
Invite judges to mediate. Yes.
Hold on. I'm just hoping Mary is capturing all of this so that we have more to add to the mediation section that we were just working on. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, the point is that while mediation is voluntary, in the U.S., judges browbeat counsel to mediate. And if you don't mediate, the judge really is all over you, and they're not very, they don't look at it very kindly, because then they consider it to be you're wasting their time. Because if you can't resolve the dispute, they think you're being unreasonable. And so there are ways of having these carrots and the stick incorporated into the mediation process. One of them, I think one of them is requiring a formal complaint. Whether a formal response is required, I'm not certain of, because I want to prevent skeletal complaints, just as a fishing expedition. And the cost of response is significant, and usually the respondent is not as well healed as the complainant.
Okay.
I think that allowing the deciding panelists to render their decision, at least as to costs, based in part upon the fact that someone didn't want to participate in mediation when they clearly could have, I think that's enough to keep people honest and put people into the mind of wanting to discuss it rationally during mediation. That's all. Thank you.
So, carrot and stick approach. Thank you, Paul. Clearly, both issues that we've been discussing are reopened. One is the class action, which Paul Keating has expressed strong objection to, and then we circled back because he had suggested that we reach out to Nominate for more mediation, and now provide some additional insight and information and ideas about the mediation process that we might adopt. So I guess both issues are on the table. Greg, let me turn it over to you.
Sure. Thanks. Greg Chatton, for the record. In this particular situation, at least, I think a class action is a good idea, and some of the concerns raised, I think, are misplaced. We're talking here about a pattern or a practice. So by definition, it's almost certainly going to be a pattern or practice that involves more than one brand owner's trademarks. It's possible it could involve a single one, but it would have to be a very big and possibly well-heeled complainant. But not all trademark owners are large corporations or particularly well-heeled. May not be as well-heeled as registries. So I don't think any kind of presumptions about who has more money are at all useful in any of these discussions. But I think, here where we're looking at a pattern or practice, that is what is, the kind of at root of the issue. Looking at individual infringements is part of it, but I think the common issues predominate, and an inconsistent adjudication would make no sense. And as John noted, consolidation is already at least contemplated, although oddly it's mentioned only once in the entire PDDRP. So it seems like implied. It's hardly been made more explicit than that. So clearly the idea is that you could have multiple parties with the same complaint about a pattern or practice. Again, indeed, that's so much more likely than a single party. In order to introduce both, judicial economy and general economy, should not require that every one of the complainants actually have to appear in the action and kind of rope together. I know there are jokes about roping together lawyers and throwing to the bottom of the ocean being a good start, but I think this is not one of those cases. So I think this is a because we're looking at a pattern of practice, something that's particularly well situated for class action. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Mary, I'm hoping we can, and you probably already are capturing it, the open question of whether consolidation is allowed by the current rules. We've now heard views on both sides, and then we've heard views on both sides with very powerful arguments about why, if it's not allowed, whether we should allow class action, with Greg saying yes, and others, or not, with Paul Keating saying no. And it looks like my request for input from a provider has been answered, which I appreciate. Neta, go ahead.
Thank you so much, Kathy. This is Neta. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, and apologies for mispronouncing your name, Neta. Go ahead.
That's okay. Just in response to a couple of questions that you had from the providers, I'll start with the mediation first. Deaf Forum is able and willing to administer the mediation. I am a little hesitant to fully commit to it until the working group works out the details exactly about what that process would entail. But yes, that's definitely something that we could comment on and provide. There were some comments about mandatory mediation. Again, I want to stress that if it is the provider or the administrator that requires the parties in compliance with the policy to go into mediation, a lot of times that frustrates the parties because, they're when they file a complaint, they're ready to go before a panelist or an arbitrator to get their case heard. I agree that if the panelist or the arbitrator demands mediation from them, that's a different story than when the provider forces them to mediation because it's required by the policy or the rules. Mandatory mediation isn't something that I can highly recommend. Regarding the claim, I think you mentioned that somebody mentioned that the claims aren't usually public until the decisions are issued. That is correct. We are currently administering our domain disputes under various policies with that understanding that the claim is not public. There was a comment about how would the trademark owners would know about other trademark owners that might want to use the PDDRP. My experience in the arbitration area in general, domain or not domain, traditional regular arbitrations, has been that usually the rules provide for multiple complainants to whether or not multiple complainants could join together in order to file a claim is provided by the policies and the rules usually, but I have never seen the rules getting into how those complainants could find each other. So that's something that is brand new, if to me at least, with my experience in the arbitration, if this working group determines to put that in the PDDRP. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, and thanks for coming online as our provider expert. Much appreciated. Of course, other providers are welcome. So we've got Paul Keating and Greg Shatton as the next commenters, and then if people want to move on, we can talk about complaints, burdens of proof, and remedies, or we can continue where we are. Paul, go ahead.
Thank you, Paul Keating. While I understand the argument for multiple brand owners' claims, I guess I'm struck with two different, concerns here. One is that really what we are creating here is a private right of action in the context of a contractual relationship between ICANN and the registry. Essentially, these kinds of claims are that the registry is not abiding by the terms of its agreement and is allowing too many registrations that are, conflictive with trademark ownership interests. I'm very reticent to open a can of worms of private causes of action. I think that ICANN is well within its confines to go after and to police its own agreements, and I think that overall allowing individuals to come in and act as the policeman or a private attorney general really are disfavored in my view for any number of policy reasons. The other concern I have is that although not as much of a grocery type business as the registrars are, registries are also generally low volume, low profit, high volume businesses. And I guess I am very concerned that while we're, I am very opposed to the class action concept in general. And I am even more opposed to it until I understand what it is that is going to be the subject of the action, okay? And to what extent are we going to be imposing obligations, affirmative obligations, upon registries as concerns intellectual property rights? I think that we need to remember that when we started down this path of the Internet and domain names Whipple had it right, that this is not a magical playland. It is exactly a mirror image of the real world, and we shall not grant greater rights in this world than exists in the real physical world. And I'm very concerned when we start down the process that it's a very slippery slope. And when we get to the end and you're the registry and you're trying to manage a business and you're also having then to be to have a department full of intellectual property lawyers who are telling you, no, you can't have this name, you can't have that name, particularly in the context of intellectual property where it is inherently factually intensive, I am completely opposed to asserting more obligations upon registries and registrars than those that already exist.
Paul, thank you. Before you get off the phone, I'll ask you a question. Welcome to come back online. It's a question open for everyone, which is clearly there's a difference of opinion on this. What avenues for additional information would you recommend that the working group seek? I'm going to ask Greg the same question. How can we explore this further?
I think everybody should chip into that. One of which is I would like to see what ICANN's enforcement policy is as to registries. I would like to see them have a commitment that they will actually police their registries, right? Among other things. I mean, for example, we're talking about providers who are going to render disputes. We haven't talked about contracts with ICANN between the provider, the resolution provider, and ICANN. Mm-hmm. Even in the UDRP, those do not exist. So it has to be, if this is a body built upon contract, which is what the entire domain business is, then you need to have all of the parts contracted for. So, yes, I would want staff to come back to us and give us some information about what's going on in the enforcement side of ICANN relative to registries and registrars, and how comfortable can we become in that process and those policies so that we don't have to necessarily worry about building in a private right of action for the very reason that the quote-unquote government is not enforcing the law.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Greg, the floor is yours, and I'm going to ask you the same question, which is what additional avenues can we seek for information? Go ahead, Greg.
Before I get to that, I think the PDDRP is a private cause of action. I don't see any problem with that. We spent dozens, if not hundreds, of hours debating it in the first go round of the applicant guidebook, and I don't see any issue with that. This is not merely a contractual relationship that somehow the rest of us have our noses pressed against the glass. It's a policy-based organization, that allows these relationships to exist in the first place, not in a vacuum. So I think, there are probably 20 cans of worms that Paul opened. We don't have the time to go through all of them, but
I'm going fishing this weekend, so I'll take some cans of worms. Thanks.
So yeah, have some worms, bait the hook, but I'm not going to bite at this time. But I think that reopening all those issues, and I was just feeling so sad for the poor little registries in listening to this, and I have a tiny little violin playing Hearts and Flowers for them. I think they're nobody's going to enter into this unless they are feeling substantially injured. This is not, something that one would enter into for fun and games.
Okay.
The point that I raised my hand to make, however, was that while we're talking about consolidation and class action or some form of this, I think there's a lot, kind of an overarching issue that those two things and a third thing fall into, which is how do you deal with factual elements or occurrences that would demonstrate the pattern or practice that involves someone other than an individual complainant that is filing the case. You may not need to have either consolidation or a class action concept if you have other ways of showing that that there are third party matters in which that or third-party actions that are involving third-party trademarks that you know, go to showing the pattern of practice.
Okay, so if there are other ways to find, can you suggest people we should talk to find out if there are other, if there are other ways of showing patterns of abuse or practice?
Well, I mean, I think we just need to look at litigations or investigations that go beyond, you know, the individual complainant. You know, they're, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think of, you know, other situations where that occurs, you know, but, you know, not thinking of one, you know, right off the top of my head. But,
okay.
You know, clearly we're looking at a kind of a unique situation here. Because it's this pattern of practice. Now, that kind of, you know, brings
you
back to RICO cases, pattern or practice. So maybe we need to look at those kinds of investigations.
Interesting. Okay. I see that Mary Wong, who's our senior staffer, has her hand up. So, Susan, I'm really glad you're on the line. Let me interrupt, and I'm sure Mary's going to remind us of the time, that we've got 8 minutes left and much more than 8 minutes of material to go. Go ahead, Mary. But, Susan, please stay on the line.
Thanks very much, Kathy, and thanks, everybody. So this is just a follow-up on some comments that Staten Hammock and I had typed in the chat for those especially who are not following the AC chat. And this is in relation to Paul's and others' points about compliance and reporting. Compliance does provide regular reports to the ICANN community as well as a monthly dashboard, and I've typed the link in the chat. So to the extent that the group would like compliance to provide it with further feedback, and I know several suggestions have already been made, we think it might be helpful for folks to take a look at those reports, see what is missing that they think might be relevant for our specific purposes, as well as any additional questions that are based on what is already reported. I think it would be much more helpful both for our compliance colleagues and for this group if the specific requests were more specific, in other words. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you very much, Mary. Susan, I'm gonna call on you, and thank you for your patience. And then I think we're going to be in wrap-up mode preparing for next week. Susan, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks. It's just very briefly, really, and just something that I, a reaction to what Paul was saying about the sort of private cause of action argument. And I'm actually going to reflect something that I noticed just now that Jay Scott actually put in the chat as well, which is just certainly as currently drafted, this isn't a cause of action, private or otherwise, that you bring just because there are infringing names in the registry. There's a much higher burden than that. There sort of needs to be really positive action on behalf of the registry to profit from the activity, you know, which, you know, the rules make it clear that that's not simply, you know, the profit that they make from selling the name. So I think his concerns are unwarranted, I think. You know, this is the really, really bad actors here, and I don't think, certainly at the moment, we haven't talked about changing that burden of proof. Maybe we will talk about it, but I just wanted to make that point.
Susan, thank you so much. There is a higher burden of proof, definitely. And thank you for your comments, and thank you for foreshadowing what I was going to talk about next, which is we're going to draw a line here on these issues. Thank you for the excellent discussion today. A lot of material to be going back into our next draft of this compilation of issues and concerns for these first two items. I wanted to give you a preview of coming attractions if you haven't read through the rest of the document. In future sessions, perhaps next week, we'll be talking about, is the trademark PDDRP too difficult to access? Is it not being used because the burdens are too high or the remedies are too uncertain? And in preparation for that, it might be useful to read Section 7, 17, and 18 of the PDDRP, which set out the current requirements for the complaint, the burden of proof, and the remedies. And then we'll enter into a discussion about substantial infringement, about changing, lowering the standard of proof, and the standard of liability. Different suggestions have come out. I'm sure that will be a very interesting discussion. Also, Section 3, on the last page, page 4, should we be strengthening or clarifying the remedies under the PDDRP? This has already been discussed in numerous sessions, so we're going to be really diving into that. And there are some other issues as well about time limits and pre-complaint notification. Mary, could we move to the questions that we want to pose to compliance and ICANN, legal counsel, and others? Is there any way you could bring that up on the screen? I wanted to point out that there's another document we're preparing now. Now, leaving the document of issues and concerns, we pose questions to the providers. They provided answers both in our meetings and in writing, which we deeply appreciate. We now have questions we want to pose to ICANN compliance, and they've actually asked us to do it in writing and a question of whether use cases would be appropriate has come up. So I wanted to show you, I don't want to hold you on the line more, but there's a document where we're trying to capture the types of questions that the working group might pose to ICANN compliance, external legal counsel, and other appropriate parties, and that have to do with a lot of the issues that we're raising that have to do with what they've seen already. So please, and that's actually the three bullets from the responses from the working group. So please take a look at that ad. There's kind of a back and forth on whether use cases would be appropriate, and some people are saying realistic scenarios would be very appropriate, and other people are saying it takes a long time to develop a good use case, and often they're dismissed anyway as, I'm not going to respond to a hypothetical. So please help us explore what to ask ICANN compliance. And then there are additional issues, concerns, and suggestions being raised by working group members. We'd like to keep the door open for that, for those suggestions for at least another week. And please take a look at what people are writing. For example, the first one is apply the rule that first do no harm. And so interesting things are being written, and we're trying to summarize them here. Is there, Mary, could you tell us when our meeting is set for next week?
Hi, Kathy. Hi, everybody. This is Mary from staff, and I'm looking to Terry and the secretariat, but I believe that the meeting next week is still Wednesday for most folks, but it will be at 2100 UTC.
Okay, so this is our later meeting coming up next week. Great, thank you. Would anyone like to make any closing comments in our last minute? Susan, is that your hand still raised, or is that a new hand? Old hand or new hand? Terrific, old hand. Thanks very much again for a very useful and informative discussion. And looking forward to continuing on the list and next week. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.